Radio Prague News.
The new school year started on Thursday with 1.2 million children going back to school. The Lower House of Parliament is debating the government's social and welfare reform. And the Greek Prime Minister has slammed Czech President Václav Klaus over his ouzo drinkers comments. The new school year started on Thursday with 1.2 million children going back to school. Czech President Václav Klaus welcomed students at a secondary school in Ostrava, which is run by his son Václav Klaus Jr., while Education Minister Josef Dobeš marked the start of the school year at an elementary school in the Prague district of Žižkov. Mr. Klaus noted that unlike Czech universities and secondary schools, the country's elementary school system is doing well in comparison with school abroad. The school year 2011-2012 brings several changes, including a trial run of contracts between schools and parents to help alleviate increasing problems with misbehaved children. The Lower House of Parliament on Thursday is debating several bills as part of the government's social and welfare reform. If passed and signed into law, they will introduce a number of changes to the welfare system. For instance, social and unemployment benefits will no longer be given out by municipalities, but rather by labour offices. Under public pressure, however, the government has scrapped plans to introduce compulsory social cards for people to take out pensions and benefits from ATMs. The reform also introduces harsher penalties for abusing social welfare. The centre-right coalition is expected to push the reform bills, strongly opposed by the Social Democrats and Communists, through the lower house next week. Greek Prime Minister Georgios Papandreou berated on Thursday Czech President Václav Klaus over his recent comments about lazy ouzo drinkers. Mr. Klaus told the Czech Daily Pravo on Saturday that it was absolutely fine if Greeks choose to spend more hours drinking ouzo under cypress trees. In that case, however, they cannot form a monetary union with Germany, the Czech president added. The Czech news agency quoted the Greek prime minister as saying that Mr. Klaus expressed his populist anti-Europeanism by offending Greeks. Should Europe not overcome such views, Mr. Papandreou said, it will once again suffer fragmentation and its people will lose the achievements reached in the last 60 years. The Czech Republic will next year provide 350 troops for the European Union's battle groups, the Czech Chief of General Staff Vlastimil Picek said after meeting with the chairman of the EU Military Committee, Hakan Siren, in Prague on Thursday. The Czech Army will provide a mechanized company complete with logistics support, Mr. Picek said. The EU's military contingent should consist of 2,800 soldiers from six countries, including Germany, Austria, Croatia, Macedonia and Ireland. It will be deployed on humanitarian, peacekeeping and reconstruction missions. The deficit of Czech public finances in August reached 87.3 billion crowns, up from 61.1 billion in July, the Czech finance ministry said on Thursday. While revenues dropped by 3.8 billion year-on-year, expenditures rose annually by 4.8 billion crowns. Analysts said the increase was slightly higher than expected. The government approved an overall budget deficit for this year of 135 billion crowns, or 3.6% of the country's gross domestic product. Hundreds of people gathered outside the Czech Education Ministry in Prague on Thursday to demand the sacking of Vladislav Bátora, a controversial right-wing figure who now serves as the minister's deputy chief of staff. Mr. Bátora, who has been accused of promoting right-wing extremism, was at the core of a recent government crisis when ministers for the coalition Topo 9 party refused to take part in the government sessions if Mr. Bátora stays in his position of the Education Ministry human resources boss. Minister Josef Dobeš eventually gave in but appointed Mr. Bátora in a new position. And finally, a brief look at the weather. The end of the week will be mostly sunny and warm, with daytime highs of around 24 degrees Celsius. My name is Jan Richter and it's the end of the news.
Hello, you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. My name is Sarah Barufka. Coming up in today's program, the government coalition is again at odds, this time over the new post of State Secretary for EU Affairs. Alois Nebel, the first Czech movie produced with the rotoscoping technique, is to premiere in Venice. And later in the program, you will hear a hijacker's memoir. A proposal to establish a state secretary for EU affairs approved by the Czech cabinet on Wednesday has divided the ruling coalition. While the proposal was pushed through by the Civic Democratic Party and Public Affairs, the third party in government Top 09 remains strongly opposed to the move, which it claims to be in violation of the coalition agreement. The party, which holds the foreign ministry, fears the new post will detract from its powers and has demanded coalition talks on the issue. Petr Drulák, head of the Prague-based Institute of International Relations, says enforcing the decision on Top 09 would not be a good move.
I believe that the current situation is really unfortunate, because this kind of decisions need to be made by the consensus, by the agreement of all the key players. You cannot enforce a unilateral idea on others. So if this function actually comes into being despite the opinion of the foreign minister, that will highly complicate the situation. The foreign minister is actually worried that important competences concerning the EU affairs will be actually transferred from the foreign ministry to the prime minister's office. And that's why he was reluctant, actually, to give his agreement to this.
We've often seen in the past that the Czech Republic sends out confusing signals, if not opposing stance to Brussels. And I'm talking about the president now and the government. Can this move, can one man resolve this?
Well, in the current situation, I don't believe that it would help at all. So on the one hand, we have these two tracks which you have already mentioned, and that's the policy of the president and the policy of the government, which is unfortunate enough. And the yesterday decision added to the confusion, because now it seems clear that we will have two tracks inside the government, the track of the prime minister and the track of the foreign minister. So the real danger is that the situation will be even more confusing than it was before.
The Top 09 party is talking about a violation of the coalition agreement, while the other two parties say it does not violate the deal. How can this be?
Well, the political agreements are usually very open texts, which are open to all kinds of interpretations. And if you have the agreement of three parties, and one of the parties feels that in its interpretation the agreement was broken, then you have clearly a problem. So the three parties now have to discuss and to resolve the problem.
How would you assess the Czech Republic's performance in Brussels in this respect? Do you feel that we really have a serious problem coordinating our stand long term?
I would say that in the last year, the Czech Republic tended to be rather passive in Brussels. I would not say that there would be any major problem, any major issues which we would have neglected. But on the other hand, we often failed to clarify the Czech position on the variety of the vital issues. That's something which is unlikely to be remedied after the yesterday's decision.
Can it be remedied at all when very often the government has one stand and the president has another?
I don't believe that the two-track problem between government and president is that vital, because after all, it's the government which called the shots. So in this respect, if the government was able to formulate a clear position, it would help a lot.
That was Petr Drulák, head of Prague's International Relations Institute, who was speaking to Radio Prague's Daniela Lazarová. Thank you for that, Daniela. Alois Nebel, the first Czech film that was produced with the rotoscoping technique, a process that renders images shot with actors in a unique black and white cartoon style, will be premiering at the prestigious International Film Festival in Venice this weekend. The movie, based on a cartoon novel by Jaroslav Rudiš that has garnered a cult following, is highly anticipated by Czech cinema lovers. Ahead of its premiere abroad, I call caught up with Alois Nebel producer Pavel Strnad and asked him about the special technique it was made with, the film's director, and what category the movie will be shown in at the festival.
Our film will be in the official selection out of competition, and we have a special midnight gala screening on Sunday, 4th of September.
Now, this new film that is being shown in Venice is based on a cult cartoon novel. Can you briefly sum up the plot or the story of the film?
The story takes place in 1989, and it's the story of the 50-year-old train dispatcher who's got nightmares and hallucinations that are coming to him, and he sees ghosts and shadows from the dark past of the region, and that brings him to the sanitarium, and we follow this character throughout his journey to becoming normal, I would say.
And I do believe this is also the first Czech film that uses a relatively new technique, rotoscoping, I think it's called. Can you describe what exactly this process entails?
We shot with actors, shot the whole film on locations with actors and also in the studio. And then the footage was redrawn and animated. So at the end we have a black and white drawn animation of the actors.
So the film is the debut film of director Tomáš Luňák. How did his involvement with the project come about?
When we decided to adapt the comic, I was looking for a director who would have experience both in animation and live action, and Tomáš was recommended to me by the designer of the comic book, who's also singer in rock band, and they made a music video with Tomáš, and he thought he would be the right director for this film. So even though Tomáš is a first time director and it was a big challenge for him, I think he did a great job because it was extremely difficult, and the whole production took more than 3 years. The result is extraordinary.
And may I ask you, in terms of other film festivals, are there plans to show the film internationally?
Well, the film goes to Toronto Film Festival right after Venice, and then I believe that it will be shown at the festivals around the world, and we also hope it will get the international distribution. So we have a very good distributor, the Match Factory, a company that was selling, for example, films like Waltz with Bashir. They have a good reputation, and I believe they will do a great job.
And lastly, for those cinema goers here in the Czech Republic, when can we see the film in the cinema here?
The Czech release is planned for September 29th, so people here in the Czech Republic will have to wait a few more weeks to see the film.
That was Pavel Strnad, producer of the film Alois Nebel, which will have its premiere in Venice this weekend. In January of 1961, three boys aged 14 and 15 boarded a regular flight between Prague and Brno. But they had another destination in mind, Munich, in West Germany. With no airport security, one of them had a handgun he had taken from his grandfather, and after some 10 minutes in air, they entered the cockpit and began to act. But the plan went terribly wrong, and they all spent many years in prison. One of them, 65-year-old Michael Prochaska, put out a book, Confessions of a Plane Hijacker, which recounts the whole story up to his departure to Australia in 1969, where he spent the next 30 years of his life. Jan Richter spoke to him.
Initially, it was just a dream, you know, we were just trying to work out a strategy, how to leave the country and so forth, but it was just a fantasy in a way. But what happened was that I happened to see a film called Hijack, and that gave me the inspiration to hijack a plane. But also, I'd like to add that at that time, and of course we're going back to the late 1950s, it was just the common knowledge that some people from the United States would hijack planes from the United States to Cuba. And of course, in our newspapers, they were sort of hailed as heroes and things like that. So, you know, the inspiration came from partly from that, partly from the film.
Well, I suppose many boys have fantasies about traveling to foreign lands, but at what point did the fantasy and the dreams actually turn into reality? When did you become serious about the plan?
Well, you know, I'd like to say one thing, and that is that I had a very strict father, and he always wanted us to do well at school. And he happened to have bad temper. He was bad tempered, you know, from time to time he would really become physical towards us. And just a couple of weeks before the hijack, my father asked for the school report, yeah, and I just gave it to him, and there was something there that really angered him, and he started hitting me with his fists for the first time and threatening me and saying, listen, if you don't get the best marks for your mid-year report, I will knock out all, you know, of your teeth. And of course, that really scared me, frightened me, because I didn't realize, I didn't know what was going on. I thought he was going crazy. And so the fantasy suddenly started to turn into reality. And I was the one who got scared of my father. And I persuaded my brother, Martin, who was 2 years younger. Mind you, I was only 15 myself. And my school friend, Václav, he was my classmate from year 9. And I just simply panicked, and then, you know, I said, okay, come on, let's do it. Let's go ahead and actually hijack a civilian aircraft. And so that was what prompted me to actually do it. But in fact, what happened was that few days before that, I learned from my Russian teacher that I was going to get a bad mark on my mid-year report. And that really scared the hell out of me.
So then you find yourself suddenly on the plane, on board of a plane that was going from Prague to Brno, with your grandfather's gun in your hand, standing in the cockpit, threatening the pilots. Do you remember now how you felt?
Yes, it's still very vivid. Still, you know, I can see it right now. I didn't feel much, you see. I wasn't frightened. As I said, I was more scared of my father than of the hijacking, because I felt at that time that would have been easy to hijack a plane like that. You just point a gun at the crew and ask them to change the course of the aircraft, and that would be the end of it. Exactly as it used to happen with those hijackings from the US to Cuba. But unfortunately, there was a miscalculation. We didn't know that the navigator was seated right behind the door. And so when we opened the door, there was the navigator.
You write in the book that you were unprepared for any kind of resistance on the side of the crew. Were you surprised when they just didn't follow your orders?
Actually, they did follow my orders, but when I entered the cabin, I was the one who had the pistol in my hands, and I entered the cabin, and suddenly I was confronted with the navigator sitting right behind the door. So I couldn't just walk past him towards the front of the cabin, and so I was suddenly confronted with the navigator. I didn't know what to do, so what occurred to me just to try to render him unconscious, and I just use the gun, but I was scared that I might hurt him. So I just basically, all I could say, literally, I just put the gun or hit him on the back of his head very lightly. But that shocked him. He was sitting on a swivel chair. He just turned around, and suddenly he was faced with a gun being pointed at his chest. And so instinctively, he tried to pull the gun away from himself towards the floor, and that's when the gun discharged, accidentally. But of course, later on, I was accused of attempted murder of the navigator, but in fact, it was an accidental happening. At that instant, My friend Václav, my schoolmate Václav, who had a dagger in his hand, he hit the navigator on the back of his head and rendered him unconscious. So when the navigator collapsed, which, mind you, everything happened in seconds, right? I then moved forward and ordered the pilots to change the course to 240 degrees, which was the course to Munich. And at that point of time, without any further question, one of the pilots, I believe it was the captain, started to turn the aircraft in the direction of Munich. And I see that very vividly now before my very eyes. I see the aircraft being turned 90 degrees. And then off we went, flying on the course, the new course, presumably the course to Munich. At that point, we had everything under control.
But something went wrong. What happened then?
Well, something went wrong. Now, the second pilot, I would call it, he was a, what we call in English, clever cookie. He definitely realized that in front of him was standing a young boy, frightened probably. I must have been scared stiff in a way. But I was pointing my gun at him, and he simply asked me, have you got any maps and things like that? Well, mind you, in the meantime, the aircraft had already changed the course. And at the same time, he just put one of his feet alongside his seat as if he were going to jump at me. But unfortunately, my friend Václav, who was behind me, keeping an eye on the navigator, he simply screamed at me something, and I didn't know what it was. And I turned my head towards him, and at that very instant, the second pilot jumped out of his seat and grabbed my gun and tried to pull it out of my hands. Of course, the gun discharged, but accidentally, because I had my head turned away from him, and in fact, I didn't notice that he was what was going on. Yeah, so that's what happened. So he grabbed the gun and tried to pull it out of my hands.
You eventually got overpowered. The plane returned, and of course, you were arrested and put to jail. You landed a 10-year sentence.
That's right.
And you served 7, if I'm correct.
Yes.
How was it for a 15-year-old boy to end up in jail for 7 years in the 1960s?
Yeah, it was a shock. I remember that quite well. Just 2 days before that, I was still at school. And not knowing what was going to happen. And now I'm in a prison for political prisoners, for political offenders, if you like, and my first feeling was just a relief that although I had been through an extremely dramatic event, or I don't know how to call it, I still felt relief because I had actually managed to escape from my father, from his violent temper. So I felt relieved on the one hand, but on the other hand, of course, it started to dawn on me that, yes, this terrible thing had happened, you know, this hijacking, all the rest. And here I was in jail at the age of 15 and 4 months. So I was kind of embracing myself for terrible times that lied ahead for me. I sensed that.
Now, Mr. Procházka, when you look back at the whole incident and all the years in jail, how do you think about it today? How do you put up with it? Do you see it as something, as a boyish fantasy that went terribly wrong? Or do you see it as something that enriched you in your life in some ways? How do you think of the whole thing?
Well, I could talk about it for hours. Yes, well, I regret one thing. I regret injuring the navigator. That's what I regret. And that's what I have regretted for the past 50 years. Today is exactly 50 years when we attempted to hijack the plane. Yeah? It happened on the 27th of January. So I regret that very much. But on the other hand, that's done. You know, that's reality. That's how it is. I mean, I can't go back and change that. But looking back on my experience, I think it was extremely enriching. It helped me to start a new life and to get a chance to live a life that simply somehow reflected my need to express myself and to make something out of myself. And I succeeded in doing that. So I believe that, you know, that, or perhaps I should say, I'm not glad that it had happened. No, I regret that. It shouldn't have happened, but it did happen, and that's a fact. But it was an enriching experience for me, certainly. I've grown up very quickly, and I have learned heaps from my experience, and I think I've become a better person.
Michael Prochaska was speaking there to Jan Richter. This edition of Panorama was first broadcast in January 2011. And this brings us to the end of our program. All of our programs and others are also available at our internet address, radio.cz. And if you have any comments, we are, of course, always pleased to hear them. You can contact us at email at english@radio.cz, on Facebook, or by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague 2. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, from me, Sarah Borufka, and from all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you for listening, and goodbye.